Wow, I look out in the audience. Is anyone back at their workstation? This room is full. I've heard rumors as to maybe some special things that may happen at the very beginning of it shortly. So maybe that explains it. But anyhow, I'm Gary Gramling, and we're going to call the regularly scheduled meeting for March to order. On March 11th, 2016 at 9.04 a.m. And I'm going to go totally out of order just because there's a special recognition I want to make. And that is that a little bit after 7 o'clock this morning, Angie, for the fifth time, became a grandmother. And, you know, she's hoping to catch up with me. I have seven grandchildren, and I can tell you right now that if I had a new grandchild, and I think it's a grandson, you said, yeah? If I had, but granddaughters are more special, frankly. But if I had a new grandchild at 7:20 this morning, I wouldn't be here at 9:05. Okay. I'd still be back there at the hospital. So she's a trooper. All right, so we've called it to order. We've got the standard comments that I'm supposed to make, and that is that members of the public who wish to address the Housing Commission must complete a speaker request form. On non-agenda items, they look like this. Okay. You can get them over there. And what you're supposed to do, if you haven't done it already, if this is the only one I've got or going to get, that's fine. But if you really intend to speak on a non-agenda item, you've got to very quickly run over there, get a white form, fill it out, get it to Angie, you know, the durable Angie here. And then she's going to rush over here and hand it to me before we get to that point. So, and seeing no one rushing for the doors or for the table over there, I guess we're safe. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes each. If we had controversial calendar, which today we don't have a very controversial calendar, we might have multiple speakers on a given topic, in which case we would restrain or cut that discussion off on that side of the topic at 15 minutes, 5 times 3. Okay. But I don't think we're going to have that problem today. Non-agenda items, public comments, will be heard very, very shortly. Those who wish to address the board about a topic that is on the agenda, their speaker request forms back there again, gold and pink. And pick the words to tell if you're on in favor of the agenda item or not in favor of the agenda item. You have at least a minute or two to get that in here today before we get to that point of this discussion. That's the basic points on it. If you did get up and want to speak, or when I call the one speaker request form, please come up here to the podium, push the button so that a little red light shows up on the microphone, identify yourself, and then proceed. Okay. So, at this point, I'm going to call Martha Welch up, who has a non-agenda item on the subject of housing. Oh, hi, Martha. How are you?
Martha Welch. I live on this downtown, and I'm looking on the trolley. There's a building down there that has a wall and a crane, and I've never seen on meetings at downtown. What's going on? I don't know. I live in Prodigal, and look at that. Three rents, 500, 5, 7 of 5, 8, 7, 8, and 6, 5, 0. No bathroom, but no kitchen. And a shower only. I don't know why we have to sign all the papers ahead. I don't know what's going on. Now, Westminster, they changed what they're doing. It's tax credit. and it's all 600 and eight and 800 and for a studio, and one bedroom 730 and 804. Why? And they say you can go, if you do that, or they say you can go profit of 30%. That's HUD. Now I know this. All the seniors and HUD that they're doing this. And tax is not really, that's not legal. And I think that all the seniors. Why? Bill Horn has Chinese, and they're free right now. I put a plank with HUD and California, fair housing about that also. I was here when the homeless were here, and you said money for them, but you know what, where to go? The pension downtown, they say we don't want that. It's 10,000 million, I'm sorry, 10 million to the pension down here. So what goes down here, you don't know how, what the city does that. You know what the problem, this is corrupt in this, the city. Why calling? And I know how to stop it because you're in fear, inundation. But right now it has one line. And you can stop that call if you want to. Go call your provider and you can stop those calls if you want to do that. Or you go fear and confession if you want to do that. I can't stop that. I have a potential lawsuit with HUD and Section 8, but I don't know if it goes over. I'm going to keep working on that lawsuit because this city, Section 8 was on lists. Not on the list. It goes to projects. That's how it goes. If the manager likes you, you can get Section 8. One person who I live wasn't on the list and got Section 8. But you know the problem with that? There's no money in Section 8. He takes the money, so there's no money. 9 million. I saw it on the budget in the county. I go to the meetings, all of the county and the city. I go to all the meetings so I know what's going on. I'm not afraid about this. Because
Martha,
that's over.
Your 3 minutes are up.
Okay, thank you.
I do thank you for taking... Oh, could you push the button again so the light would go off? Thank you for taking your time to be here today. It is the practice of the Housing Commission to not comment when a speaker comes in and talks on a non-agenda item. And so we've paid attention, and if any of the commissioners have questions about this area, we can follow up later. But thank you again. Okay, commissioners, it's time for your opportunity to comment. Do any of you have any comments today? Everyone seems to be stilled in silence. Okay, so now we'll go to the report by the President and Chief Executive Officer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I always have comments. Today, some very special ones. I'm going to ask the chairman to go front and center to have his photo taken with some very special people here. Yes, sir, please. Okay. Who are special people are here with us today. As you all may remember, the Housing Commission holds all employee staff meetings 3 times per year. The staff meeting that typically occurs in February acknowledges award recipients for performance the previous year. We ask staff to nominate, and then senior staff votes on 3 individual awards of excellence and 1 team award of excellence. And then I get to do a CEO special award each year, too. And what I'd like to do is recognize these good folks to the board. And beginning with the first 2015 award of excellence recipient, and that person is Sylvia De La Mora. Sylvia, if you would come up. Sylvia, yeah.
I'm told that many of them who are receiving awards this morning have actually already received them, so I'm not going to be candid and quick. That's right. She brought that. That's why she got the award. That's it. You're a Girl Scout and always prepared.
Yeah, Sylvia De La Mora is a workforce readiness specialist in our rental assistance division. And Sylvia is being recognized for providing superior customer service, being a top performer in her department, and providing personalized attention to the 140 clients in her caseload. One of her clients wrote an email to her supervisor calling Sylvia the Housing Commission's top cheerleader and a guardian angel who helped her graduate from college and assisted members of her family as they applied for and secured jobs. Sylvia, thank you. Very special person. Wonderful smile. Our second 2015 Award of Excellence honoree is Luis Barrios. Luis is an administrative assistant in the Homeless and Housing Innovations Department. Luis, come on up. He's got his with him, too. Smart guy. Luis has been involved with Project Homeless Connect for 4 years, first as a volunteer, then as a consultant, and then for the last 2 years as a Housing Commission employee. Every year he has raised the bar for the success of Project Homeless Connect, and he is a great example of the impact our employees can have on behalf of the agency through their hard work. Luis, thank you. Our third award winner is Cameron Shariati, Assistant Real Estate Manager in the Real Estate Division. Cameron. Cameron was recognized for going above and beyond his regular responsibilities to help advance the Housing Commission's programs and for helping to train new staff and put in extra time and effort to ensure information is provided when needed. Cameron assisted the real estate division by administering the density bonus and inclusionary housing programs. He also took over the strategic project management activities for the entire housing finance and program development departments. He performed these duties in addition to his regular duties. Cameron, couldn't do it without you. Thank you very much. And again, I will remind the board that these folks were nominated by their peers and then selected by senior staff, but each one of these people was nominated by their peers or they wouldn't be in the running in the first place, which is, to me, the key to it. Next is we have one team of excellence that we recognize each year, and these are going to be several folks whose names I'm going to read out, and this is the inspections team in a rental assistance division. You guys come on up. Del Marin, Jose Corrales, Maria Gomez, Maria Nunez, Denise Williams, Eric Smith, Gary Hoffman, Marcus Hill, Mike Lai, Raquel Centrone, James Mendez, Victor Martinez, Gloria Brown, Henrietta Ochoa, Ursula Cartwright. This 15-member team is essential to ensure that low-income and formerly homeless San Diegans have decent, safe, and sanitary homes. Last year, this team implemented a new initiative, I will point out, to enhance their effectiveness, and as a result of this new initiative, we've resulted in the savings of more than $4,500 to the agency in the performance of their duties, which fits in very well with what you all were talking about in the retreat this morning. I'll also point out that the real estate division is a transfer of payments for folks to live in the private sector. What makes sure that those folks are living in decent housing is the inspection's function. So these people are very important indeed. The final award is very special to me because I get to do it. It's the CEO Award of Excellence. And through the year, I will file away comments that employees and managers make about their colleagues who are exceptional at what they do and do some noticing my own self. And these are folks who have a great attitude. They're respectful of others. And they're just exceptional in their craft and their people skills. And this year was particularly pleasing to me to award this CEO Award of Excellence to Emmanuel Velasco, who usually does the picture taking. And now we'll get his picture taken. That's why he's wearing a suit and tie today. Each of us have been touched by Emmanuel's work, whether it's our homeless programs, our participants in the Achievement Academy, or just surfing our website. For the past 2 years, he has been essential to our award-winning signature project, our annual report. He has taken the lead on layouts, contributing to photos, videos, and graphics. He's a wonderful team member. He's usually the person in the background making sure other people get recognized. And it's great for Emmanuel to be recognized himself as well. Couldn't be more pleased. And the look on his face, we were able to keep this secret from him. The look on his face when he got the award was priceless. We got you good. If I could, Gary, I'd like to also ask you to stay up there while we recognize some folks for longevity. Each year we also recognize people who've been here in 5-year increments. And this year we have, I'd like to recognize 7 people who have each celebrated 30 years of service at the Housing Commission, and then one other one, 35 years. The 30 years first, if you all would come up. Karen Colvin, Rental Assistance Division. Steve Dean, Real Estate Division. Wendy DeWitt, Real Estate Division. Christy Huerto, Financial Services Department. Patty Lamb, Rental Assistance Division. Anna Silsby, Rental Assistance Division. And Anita Solis, Rental Assistance Division. Assistance Division. These are each 30-year folks. There's some on vacation today. That's probably how they could stand to be here for 30 years. And one final, yes, sir. We got one more, 35 years. This person was one of San Diego Housing Commission's original employees, and please recognize me and or join me in recognizing Nancy Deeds, a loan service specialist in a real estate division. 35 years. Thank you all. I think it's important for the board to understand the high degree of competence among our folks, the great commitment that we all have. And thank you all, too. We have a wonderful cadre of folks here, and I wanted the board just to recognize that. Thank you all very much. Mr. Chairman, I've got 2 or 3 other very brief comments, too, just for recognize some events that have occurred since our last board meeting. On March the 1st, the City Council approved the funding for the 1,000 Homeless Veterans Initiative that you all acted on last month, including the Mayor's Housing Our Heroes program, which has gotten a lot of recognition in the city. So we are now officially underway as of the 1st of the month. Well, for the record, again, note that landlords who wish to participate in our with rental properties and our Housing Our Heroes Veterans Homelessness Program can either access us at our website, which is housingourheroes@sdhc.org, or call our phone hotline, which is 619-578-7768. Also, relative to the construction cost issue, which has been of interest to the board, 2 days ago on March the 9th, I was honored to give some testimony before the California Senate Committee on Transportation and Housing and delivered our report called Addressing the Housing Affordability Crisis, an Action Plan for San Diego. The report was extremely well received. It will get some additional legs, I'm sure, some additional visibility in Sacramento. And it's also put San Diego right in the forefront of advocating for that change for the state. I'll also point out that the Housing Affordability Report was highlighted in a California Economic Summit blog post on February the 25th, which was started, this Economic Summit was started 4 years ago to connect state and regional leaders and to develop a shared agenda on generating jobs and improving regional competitiveness. So that cost issue is beginning to get a lot of notice statewide. I'll also point out in closing, Mr. Chairman and board, you may have seen in the newspaper yesterday that HUD awarded just short of $16 million for homelessness programs for the city and county of San Diego. Just right at $4 million of that came to the San Diego Housing Commission, which will be used for a number of our homeless programs administered by Jeff Davis and Melissa Peterman in our homelessness division. Such things as an award of some $533,000 to the Association for Community Housing Solutions, including its prison program and its unity program, some $448,000 to mental health systems, some $353,000 to St. Vincent de Paul's, some $338,000 to the YWCA, some $206,000 to San Diego's Rapid Rehousing Program, some $132,000 to the Townspeople 34th Street Project. This is money that comes to the Housing Commission, but mainly flows through us to other providers who do the actual retail work in dealing with the homeless community out there. We're very pleased to see this award occur. And with that, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my report for the day.
Thank you very much. And again, thank you, all of you who were recognized this morning. This agency wouldn't be probably 50% of what it is if it wasn't for your outstanding efforts on behalf of the agency, but more importantly, on behalf of the people of San Diego. So, again, thank you very, very much. At this time, I get to propose a consent agenda, and I'm proposing that the following items be moved to consent. Item 100, item 101, item 102, and item 103. It's a long consent agenda, but that's my proposal.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded, the approval of the proposed consent agenda. Any discussion? Seeing no indication of such, all in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The consent agenda is hereby approved. Next is the approval of the minutes for February 12th, 2016. It was a regular meeting. You've all had an opportunity to read them. Any changes, comments, deletions of any kind? In that case, is there a motion to approve the minutes? Commissioner Cerdy has moved approval of the minutes. Is there a second? Commissioner Davis reached the finish line first on the second. And so now is there any discussion again? Seeing no indication of such, then I'll call the question. All in favor of approving the minutes as posted indicate by saying aye. Opposed? The minutes are approved. We will now go to item 104 on the agenda, which is a workshop and discussion on the City-County Reinvestment Task Force.
Good morning, Chair Gramling, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, Mr. Christensen. I'm Debbie Ruane, Senior Vice President with the Real Estate Division, and I wanted to intro this workshop because it's very important to us. You all know Wendy DeWitt. She's been here a long time, 30 years. You may not know Daisy Crompton, though. Daisy's been with us for a few years now, and she is dedicated to working on the City-County Reinvestment Task Force. She's the director of that. And Daisy comes to us, she's been at LISC as a program analyst officer, and also with Councilmember Tony Atkins. So we're very happy to have Daisy on our staff. This is an exciting workshop for us. We haven't presented this to you, and so hopefully it's a learning opportunity for you, and we look forward to sharing with you the updates and advances that Daisy's made since she's joined us.
Great, thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. Wendy DeWitt, Director, Business and Program Development. We thank you for the opportunity to come before you and tell you a little bit about the good work that the City-County Reinvestment Task Force has been doing. The City-County Reinvestment Task Force is kind of a unique organization. We've been told that there aren't any others that are organized like this. It's a collaboration of local governments, financial institutions, and nonprofits in the San Diego region. It was established in 1977, before the Housing Commission was established, by joint resolutions of the city and the county. And this was also the same year that Congress passed the Community Reinvestment Act. The CRA Act was enacted to reduce discriminatory credit practices. The RTF facilitates bank CRA activities by developing strategies to increase lending for affordable housing, small business, as well as financial education and workforce development. It's been administered by the Housing Commission since 2009. It's jointly funded by the Housing Commission and the county. In 2015, the Housing Commission expended just a little over $78,000 toward the operating budget. The mandate of the RTF is city and county, and the meetings are considered public, and they are governed by the Brown Act. Now, I'm going to ask Daisy to give you a description of the membership structure and talk a little bit about the activities of the task force. Daisy.
Thank you. Good morning. The RTF is led by two co-chairs, one from the city, one from the county. The co-chair from the city is a member of the city council. The co-chair from the county is a member of the board of supervisors. Together, they appoint the other 13 members of the RTF, who are one representative from each of five banks, one representative from each of the north, the south, and the east parts of the county, and one representative from each of five community development organizations. The current co-chairs of the RTF are City Councilmember Myrtle Cole and County Supervisor Ron Roberts. Supervisor Roberts is also the current chair of the Board of Supervisors. He's also the current chair of SANDAG. Both Supervisor Roberts and Councilmember Cole sit on the board of MTS. The other organizations represented on the RTF are the largest banks in our region, U.S. Bank, Chase, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Citibank, and Union Bank. Representatives from one local government, the Lemon Grove City Council, and representatives from the community development organizations that we generally work with the most, longtime San Diego Housing Commission partners like Community Housing Works, Local Initiative Support Corporation, Small Business Lender Acción. The Center on Policy Initiatives is a local think tank on equity, income, and poverty. Money Management International is a financial coaching and financial literacy organization. Wendy spoke of the history of the RTF being rooted in the Community Reinvestment Act. When the federal regulators evaluate banks under CRA, they look at three different what they call tests, as you see here. When we speak of the RTF working to increase CRA activity, then, this is what we're talking about. Loans for affordable housing, community development projects, small business, single-family mortgages for low and moderate-income people, and census tracts. Equity investments in tax credits, equity equivalent financial instruments, and other financial investments in affordable housing, community development financial institutions, loan pools, And because the regulators classify corporate giving this way, grants are included as investments when the regulators look at them. The third category is services. This includes branches, ATMs, where they're located, and with respect to LMI individuals, the array of products offered to LMI individuals, and employee volunteering by bank, employees. So the RTF mirrors and works to locally implement CRA. The RTF has a two-pronged strategy, monitoring bank CRA activity and increasing reinvestment in LMI areas. It does this through four activities: an annual community reinvestment report, ongoing monitoring of local development, community development needs and gaps, collective action projects, and RTF monthly meetings to identify issues and opportunities in community development. Under the first strategy, monitoring bank CRA activity, the RTF issues an annual community investment report that paints a picture of countywide reinvestment by measuring RTF Bank's previous calendar year activity. It mirrors the CRA's three categories, and it increases the accuracy and transparency of tracking annual progress and long-term trends. It helps to inform solutions and identify priorities for regional attention and action. The data in the report come from the RTF's annual survey shown here. We thought we'd share four highlights from the most recent report. In 2014, RTF banks, countywide investment by the RTF banks, and the RTF banks represent about 75% of the local financial services market for banks, not including credit unions and other mortgage providers. So 2014 reinvestment by the RTF banks was almost $1.6 billion. You can see the largest category of that by far is mortgages to LMI borrowers and census tracts. The second largest area is small business loans, followed closely by affordable housing, which saw $314 million of lending in 2014. In the area of investments and tax credits, which is largely affordable housing but also includes some of those CDFI, lending pool infusions and the like, there were $247 million worth of investments. The smallest categories are community development lending, small farm loans, and grant making and corporate giving by the banks, which was $5.5 million. If we look at it by bank, we see that Wells Fargo was the largest, followed by Union Bank, Bank of America, Chase, and so on. The proportions here sort of replicate exactly the size of the banks in our market. So Wells is the biggest, Union Bank is second biggest, and so forth. If we dive into the affordable housing category lending, we see that Union Bank, the tall yellow bar, was an outsized competitor, providing $219 million in loans for affordable housing in 2014. For them, that represents a little under 2% of their local assets, purpley-blue bars that you see. We use local deposits We use local deposits as a rough proxy for bank size. And that way you can really compare apples to apples. How much, what effort did each bank put into it? So Union Bank put in almost 2%. If you look over to the far right, you can see that Citibank did greater than 2%. Partly that's a factor of the fact that they are very, very small in this market, but they still play like a big kid. They've really put a lot of money into community development and affordable housing here. So you see they were second in 2014 at $37 million, followed by U.S. Bank and then Wells Fargo. Conversely, if you look at Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and Chase, which are all huge, they do not perform as well in this area. The Wells Fargo rep on the RTF saw this and said he would talk to his colleagues about the market opportunity that he saw. One thing that we've seen with the survey is that it shows the other banks what the size of the market is. They may not realize we can make money in affordable housing. And now we're providing the transparency that they can take back to their colleagues and see the money that they're leaving on the table and begin to compete for this business. If we look at the equity side, and again, this is largely affordable housing, but it also includes other loan pools, we see Union Bank again dominating. And we see Citibank and also U.S. Bank playing well in this category, investing a larger percentage of deposits than Union Bank did. And I just want to say the Union Bank performance is also in some ways a counterbalance to an area of weakness that they have in CRA, which is mortgages to low and moderate income people. Traditionally, they had played in the jumbo market, and when the regulators decided to get a little stricter after the financial crisis, Union Bank saw its rating downgraded. And so, in fact, when we see these big bars for Union Bank, we're seeing CRA at play. Wendy.
Thanks, Stacey. Before we move on to the other strategies, I just wanted to say that 2 years ago, this report didn't exist in this format. This is something that Daisy has created since her involvement with the Reinvestment Task Force. The history of the reporting that this group did was more to they used the CRA reporting of the banks to kind of point fingers, and it was more punitive, and bank meetings would be convened and say, well, why did you underperform here and here? And so it was more of an adversarial aura on this committee, but Daisy's really been able to turn this around to a more collaborative effort. This report has been redesigned so that we can actually read the CRA reporting. If you look it up on the web, it's very difficult to make comparisons, to kind of see the highs and the lows. And this report is very clear. It gives some very good detail, and it reports out on the areas that we're interested in where our interests are aligned with the banks. And there's a very collaborative approach now, and which is quite a benefit to us. So I will go into the other strategies that the Reinvestment Task Force engages in to increase reinvestment in low and moderate income areas. The first strategy is the collective action initiative projects. This is also something new that we've been able to add to the task force. And collective action initiatives is typically used in the philanthropic arena to describe focuses for grant areas. And the Reinvestment Task Force has picked this up with Daisy's guidance. And they are now getting together and defining projects that will help fill reinvestment gaps, extend outreach. And these are things that they do get credit for under the Community Reinvestment Act. The first one, these are the current projects they have on the slate, and they have these on a critical path timeline. There are committee meetings that meet and discuss these projects. The first one, the virtual counselor network partnerships. The VCN is something that the Housing Commission is vested in. Housing Opportunities Collaborative has created this virtual counseling that happens online, where anyone can access it through a web portal. And the Reinvestment Task Force has become involved because they see this as a way to get their banking information and some of the training and informative things they do about credit and home buyer financing. They can actually put it on a virtual network. So they're working to extend the partnerships that the VCN is trying to establish presently. Home ownership fair, this is something that Council District 4 likes to do in their district from time to time. They pick an area that's immediately adjacent to county home ownership areas, and this one will be near Spring Valley and City Council District 4. And the unusual thing about this one is that it's not only for first-time home buyers, but there will also be sessions for first-time home buyers who are actually owners now, and it will provide them information on how to finance improvements to the home, you know, home budgeting, things that are helpful for staying in a home and keeping the home improved. So it's a little bit different twist on the typical home ownership fair. Mortgages for affordable for-sale homes. This is a kind of an issue identification, and we had our Vicki Montz from our first-time homebuyer group come into the RTF and describe what is a gap in their program. The affordable for sale homes, the current owners of those homes were finding it hard to find a bank that would refinance when all the refinancing was going on, when the interest rates dropped. Maybe a little suspicion of the affordable housing covenants that are recorded on the property. Vicki was able to come in, describe it. She even brought the documents and said this is a very safe investment. And she had two banks sign up to participate. So it was a great benefit and a great venue to be able to bring that to. Pipeline projects. The group is talking about getting involved in the Housing Commission's effort to create a regional affordable housing resource. And this is a listing of affordable housing that's available. Instead of using a paper copy or going online and looking at a copy, this would place not only the Housing Commission and city's affordable housing, but the county, surrounding cities, you know, Lemon Grove, Chula Vista, get it all on a regional web platform and make it searchable. They're looking at ways they can support it, maybe through advertising on the site, but financial support. The Affordable Housing TOD Fund, we had the opportunity to sit in front of the Reinvestment Task Force and tell them about this fund that we're working to create. We immediately got follow-up calls from the banks who are interested in investing. Maybe this way. Okay, great. The second strategy is to increase reinvestment in LMI areas is to identify issues and opportunities. This is sort of a learning agenda. At the monthly meetings of the Reinvestment Task Force, Daisy sets an agenda that has informative topics that we take before the banks and these community development nonprofits. And some good examples are the Transit-Oriented Affordable Housing Fund. We had Ted Mihara from Housing Finance come in and talk about what type of affordable housing financing is currently available, what's in the pipeline, talking to the banks about cap-and-trade resources. In the single-family arena, it's a perfect arena for our Carrie Tapia to come in and talk about the successes of the first-time homebuyer program because the Housing Commission administers it for the county as well. In planning and infrastructure, Daisy has arranged for SANDAG to come in and present the comprehensive regional plan, the transit plan, the smart growth incentive plan. We've invited the Jacobs Foundation to come in and talk about Market Creek Village and investment opportunities that are there. City officials have come to talk about city efforts to achieve the designation of a federal promise zone for programs. Melissa Peterman has come in to talk about the Housing Commission's Pay for Success pilot program that we're conducting through a grant. And gaining a lot of interest and potentially for a follow-up program. The outcomes of the Reinvestment Task Force. These activities of the Reinvestment Task Force have created opportunities to leverage all the member organizations' combined resources to provide measurable outcomes and benefits to the community. This is through the collective action project methodology to provide increased opportunities for local investment, and it's generally a greater engagement of the banks, the policy makers, and the stakeholders. The banks and the nonprofits, and as well as the co-chairs, are very engaged in these meetings and find them very productive. It's also forging new partnerships for us in arenas where we haven't been before. The Housing Commission, as administrator of the Reinvestment Task Force, also gains benefits from being there. The new community investment report, we have that data annually. Daisy works very hard to put that together. She has a good relationship with those banks. There's renewed bank participation in our affordable housing program. the first-time home buyer program gets an arena to talk about the success and the past year's activities. We had an RTF bank volunteer to participate in one of our Section 3 programs that involved subcontractor trainings and on access to capital, such as lines of credit. Daisy's been involved in San Diego Grant Makers. We're a member of the organization, and she's taken the opportunity to take our other departments there and introduce them to the Grant Maker members. So we're learning about the types of things that they invest in, and in turn, they are learning about our programs and what we're doing out in the community. The Affordable Housing TOD Fund and the Paid for Success Pilot Program are other examples. In conclusion, the Reinvestment Task Force is a valuable regional resource. It is bringing community leaders together. They're creating a new way to look at reinvestment in the entire region, and the Housing Commission is at the forefront of that leadership. And this concludes our presentation on the task force, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Commissioners, any questions? Yeah. It's the program overall has gone through quite a change over the years. Initially, the Community Reinvestment Act, the response of the lenders was primarily to construct branches within the CRA areas. That was their number one activity. And that was major because the communities were all being denied credit opportunities because there was no bank nearby on that. So it was very significant in that regard. But it was limited in terms of what they're doing. Today, based on what you've shown us here, there's been quite an expansion on that. So, great. Sir?
Just a couple of ancillary comments, Mr. Chairman. For the first 32 years of the RTF's existence, it was a one-person shop. It was run by a guy named Jim Bleisner at a city hall reporting to council president. And when Jim retired in 2009, Tony Young, who was then council president, asked for the Housing Commission to take it over, basically to put it in context with the rest of the organization here and give the synergies of all the other things that we do. We did take it over then, and under leadership of particularly Wendy and Daisy, it has grown and expanded greatly over the past 6-7 years. And it is, if you put it in the context of the organization here, is one of our smaller programs, but it has perhaps the broadest reach of anything we do. And it puts us in the middle of some city-county cooperative relationships that I think has had a positive spillover effect in our credibility with the county as well. Daisy, thank you for that.
To what extent are the monies being used in investment, per se, in creation of new construction or things of that nature? Any idea?
Well, one of the slides was about investment, and it also included investment in tax credits. And I believe that one was the one where Union Bank hit the $219 million mark. So we can see through this reporting, we can see who the big investors are in housing.
Because once upon a time, after they got the branches constructed, a lot of the lenders, in those days they were primarily the thrifts, the savings and loans, were using their dollars to joint venture with contractors and developers to build inner city low-income housing. And I don't see as much of that in many cases these were for-profit builders who were doing this with that money. And I don't see that sort of thing like we did back then. Any idea?
Yeah. Chair Gramling, the combined investment in construction through the investments, tax credits, and lending is a little over $500 million. But to the extent that you're speaking about building homes, single-family homes, the incentives aren't there and the costs are too high.
This is, I've been here my whole life. This is very learning for me to hear this. I appreciate the presentation. On the report that you get from the banks, are those audited in reports, or you take what they provide you for at face value? How does that work, Daisy?
Oh, you had to ask. They are self-reported, and we're very upfront about that. I'm trying to double-check the numbers that we can double-check against federal sources of information, but as Wendy said, and you can ask any CRA advocate, not only are the websites very convoluted and you need specialized software to get some of the information just isn't available. For example, what affordable housing was permanently affordable versus just multifamily mortgages. The way that we try to do sort of error checks is I run a lot of ratios and have actually gone back to the banks and said, whoa, your numbers are showing that you'd have a $700,000 mortgage in an LMI area for an LMI person. And so then they go back and they check that way. And then we also ask them for lists of the permanently affordable developments that they fund. So then I can total those up and confirm that amount. And Union Bank definitely went and gave us a full list.
Well, as you indicated, the reason Union Bank got into it during the crunch was because of the fact that they weren't into it. And the federal government does keep, they somewhere in the myriad of offices that they have, they keep very detailed records because the lenders get credits, meaning that their asset requirements change depending upon the increase of CRA's activity that they have, and they get punished by the Fed, probably the FDIC or something, but they get punished if they don't meet the right levels, and that's what happened with Union Bank. So
the other thing that is happening with this report is when it's finally completed, the banks can't wait to see it because it's a level of transparency that they have against their competitors. And it actually increases competition between those banks, and they're looking at maybe some business that they have left on the table. So it's kind of interesting to see. They're using the document internally to inform their different bank departments because they don't have the CRA data boiled down to an easily readable report.
Mr. Chairman, the other point I was going to make is in one of the projects that you have in your pipeline for this regional resource web portal idea is a neat idea. I mean, the demand has never been greater, right? The need's never been greater than today to provide a coordinated platform for resources out there. And so I'm excited about how that's going to come together for you, for everybody here. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes our public portion of the meeting.